Welcome into this edition of Chill Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be getting to the BMW Championship, the 50-man event this week at Bellerive in St. Louis. Of course, the cut down from the top 50 players in the FedEx Cup standings to the top 30 and next week's season-ending tour championship. But if you're curious what that bass thumping is in the background, yes, that is Rex Hoggard live on site at the LIV Golf Indianapolis. Yes, the team individual championship all folded into one. Rex, the people in the YouTube comment section were somewhat in disbelief when I mentioned at the end of last week's pod that you would be on site in Indy for the final LIV event, not just of 1.0, but potentially of LIV Golf in its entirety. What are the vibes like? Because obviously, it's a party with all that bass thumping.
There's a lot of bass thumping going on right now. There was actually some producers who were a little surprised I showed up here. So I just want to point out that that doesn't, not limited to the YouTube comments at all. Now, how about my live shot? It's good, huh?
The music,
players in the background. Look at that, John.
You're not nearly as sweaty and hot as you were last week in Memphis.
It's actually lovely. It's very nice here. And I've pointed that out to anybody who told me, like, regardless of what's going on in the world of golf right now, I'd much rather be here than Memphis because it was 192 degrees in Memphis. The vibe on the ground, it was a little uncomfortable. I got here Tuesday morning. I'm not going to lie. I was a little worried it was going to be uncomfortable because here's the deal. And I don't mean this is going to come out wrong and I'm going to get ratioed and everyone's going to come at me. I know this is the way, but it feels like I'm attending a funeral that I wasn't invited to. And no one crashes a funeral. So that's very uncomfortable. I don't particularly want to look at it that way. And actually, I'm not even quite sure if this is going to make it better. It's not a funeral. Like, it doesn't feel like a funeral. It might feel a little bit like hospice. The patient's not doing great, if I'm being honest with you. And I think the patient knows they're not doing great. I just came out of Scott O'Neill's press conference. He spoke with the media for about 35 minutes. And I have had the opportunity to talk with some players and talk with some folks. And let's get this out of the way very, very early. I have people that I've worked with my entire life. I have friends who went to work for LIV Golf. This is not a celebration at all. This is not a good thing, what's happening right now with LIV Golf. And I know, however it is you look at this, you're going to view it through the lens of whatever your politics are when it comes to this particular divide in professional golf. But I do feel bad for the people here who may have a job next year. And like, look, we're going to get into what Scott O'Neill said. They may have a job next year. Maybe LIV Golf 2.0 does carry on. Maybe he is able to close out this deal and create this international product that he seems to be angling for right now. Because honestly, it doesn't feel like the end. And I know that was the idea, and that's why I'm here. Like, is this going to be the last tour event? I don't think it is going to be. Because if you look, there's a lot of rich people. There's a lot of rich people that like golf. There's a lot of rich people who always seem to think they're the smartest people in the room. And so they're usually gravitated to a situation like this, where I love golf, and I can make a difference here. And that seems like what's going on here. I say all that because I don't feel like this is going to be the last one. This is going to be the last one of these. This is going to be the last one, golf but louder. Because that was the catchphrase, right? I don't think this carries on. Whatever they tried to create with LIV Golf initially, it's not going to be that going forward. It's going to be something else.
All right, let's start, because there was a player meeting on Tuesday in Indianapolis, and there was Scott O'Neill's press conference as a CEO on Wednesday. I first want to start with players, because we really didn't hear from them at LIV Golf Bedminster. There was another player meeting there. They were sort of hush-hush and certainly seemed like LIV executives did not want them front-facing and talking about it. You did have an opportunity to get guys on the record, which was a pleasant surprise, of Brendan Steele among them. How would you describe the level of optimism or certainty that the players have in regards to the future plans for LIV 2.0?
I think it depends on the players. Brendan Steele, as you pointed out, was very optimistic. And I asked him point blank because he was kind of asked about what's the vibe in the room. Because look, the headline, Damon just asked me what the headline was coming out of this press conference. And it really is. Scott O'Neill was asked point blank in the press conference, can this deal go through if you don't have the player support? And his comment was, he's focused on the transaction. Scott O'Neill is focused on the transaction, trying to get this lead investor across the finish line. But without those players, it becomes, quote, very difficult. I feel like that's a bit of an understatement.
The transaction is contingent on player buy-in, right?
You would think so. And so it was interesting talking with players yesterday. Brendan Steele, when I asked him point blank, what are your plans next year? Like, where do you plan to play golf next year? And he said, LIV. He said, I've been here 4 years. This is where I want to be. I'm dedicated. I like what they're talking about. Very optimistic coming out of that meeting. That lead investor was in that meeting yesterday. There was a lot of ideas being thrown back and forth. I was told there was a lot of energy in that room. Martin Keimer came out of that room, seems like, with a lot of optimism as well. However, Martin Keimer stopped well short of Brendan Steele when asked, where are you playing next year? So did Sergio Garcia. Sergio Garcia's comment was a very short, we'll see. And I think that's what we are right now. I think it's fair to say, and Bryce DeChambeau hasn't spoken with anybody about this, nor has John Rahm really spoken with anybody about this, but depending on the various reports that are out there, and I believe some of them, don't believe others, it seems as if John Rahm is ready to move on from LIV Golf. He has a couple more years in his contract. Like, it's complicated if there's bankruptcy involved, and not going to get into any of that. Bryce DeChambeau's contract is up at the end of this year, essentially on Sunday, when they putt out here at Chatham Hill. So those two players are going to be the linchpins. It seems like John is going in one direction and Bryson is going in the other. Everyone I've spoken to about Bryson said he is all in, both publicly and privately. And this is something that he wants to embrace. So you can see how he feels like this is going to impact his legacy. But it depends entirely on how many of those players he can convince this is worthwhile to stick around for another year and see what happens.
Yeah, I want to put a pin in Rahm and Bryson and circle back to that in a minute. It is interesting to hear folks like Martin Keimer and Brendan Steele and outlining what their potential plans could be for 2027 and beyond. We always talk on the PGA Tour that there's sort of a class system, and this new system is going to codify what's always sort of existed, that there's haves and there's have-mores. On LIV, I guess you could make a similar argument, right? Like, LIV clearly has an upper class of player. I'm talking about a John Rahm, a Bryce DeChambeau, a Joaquin Niemann, a Cameron Smith. Lucas Herbert has certainly elevated himself into that conversation this year. And then, Rex, there's, I would say, even the middle class of LIV Golf. And I could see why continuing on with whatever LIV 2.0 is going to be, and it's by all accounts still going to be about 10 events. It's still going to be, I don't know, roughly $10 to $15 million purses. That's pretty good for a tour middle class that might not have a lot of competitive options elsewhere. So do you almost see sort of a stratifying on LIV Golf as well, where I think the middle class of LIV would certainly be incentivized and motivated to keep going, whereas the upper class might be looking a little bit further down the road and may want to rejoin the established landscape in the golf ecosystem that's been so familiar to everybody?
I don't think it's as clear cut as it is going to be on the PGA Tour starting in 2028, only because you have the outliers. Again, I just talked about Bryson. We're going to touch on that later. He clearly seems committed to whatever the next chapter is. I think Cam Smith is an interesting one. He actually addressed this a few weeks ago with the idea, are you talking with anyone from the PGA Tour? And he seemed to ride the fence pretty well. But yeah, I like where you're going with this. I guess it depends on where you are in your career, how old you are, what level of competition you might consider you are. Are you one of those elite players? Are you a player that, which I guess we can say it. Do you feel like you're a championship player, championship series player, or do you feel like you're a challenger series player? And then those answers are going to vary vastly depending on who you're talking to.
I mean, a 10 event schedule with $10 to $15 million purses for a player who would either be going to DP World Tour or having to scrap for, you know, on the Korn Ferry Tour after sitting out a year, like, it looks like a pretty good situation for some who may have some pretty paltry options. There was a report online that it's since been disputed and refuted by Joel Beal of Golf Digest about John Rahm's plans potentially working his way back to the PGA Tour. But all indications certainly look like this could potentially be the end of the line for John Rahm as it relates to LIV Golf. He's still under contract through at least the end of next year. Meanwhile, Bryson DeChambeau's LIV contract is up. We spent a lot of time talking about Bryson on the show this season. I could see, Rex, why a LIV 2.0 would be pretty appealing for someone like Bryson. Because when you look at the overall landscape, let's say Rahm does depart at the end of 2026. You wouldn't have Rahm. Dustin Johnson's no longer the force. Brooks Koepka already left LIV at the end of 2025. You have other players who could potentially looking for an escape hatch to the DP World Tour. Phil Mickelson is MIA. This is an opportunity for Bryson to really shape a competitive golf circuit in his own image, of his own making, and really be the centerpiece that he's never been at any stage. He wasn't on the PGA Tour where he, at the end of the line, became ostracized, and he wasn't on LIV Golf because they had other headliners as well. I could see why it would be very, very attractive for him. The question I have for you, Bryson led the player meeting at Live Bedminster. Is Bryson at the forefront of this player movement for Live 2.0? Do you think that is enough of a selling point for the rest of this Live membership to want to follow suit?
Oh, I don't think so, because Bryson himself could be polarizing, not just among the media or the fans, but even among the players. My guess is there's some players really like Bryson and some players who, not my kind of guy, don't want to really hang out with him. So I think that the decisions will come individually. And by that, I had a chance to maybe talk to the players off the record yesterday afternoon when I arrived. And the idea is it really depends on where you are in your career. Do you have one eye towards the PGA Tour champions and maybe what comes next in that chapter, or you feel like you're still in your competitive prime? I think that's going to factor into it. I did think Brendan Steele's take was interesting, because you could argue that you have a lot of middle-class players on Live Golf. I would argue there's a lot more middle-class players than there are in that top half of players. And you're right. You can see why it's attractive to them. Now, I can see your point about Bryson DeChambeau, the idea that he can be the leader of a team for the first time, and he can sort of mold how this tour develops in his own image. And Scott O'Neill just said, like, he's been really instrumental in whatever this next chapter is going to be, and it probably continues to be that way. Also, I don't think we need to stick our head in the sand. If you look at the lead investor, according to various reports, his name is a guy named Ted Goldthorpe. And he's the co-founder and a partner at something called BC Partners. And if you follow that line down, the management firm that represents Bryson DeChambeau is a subsidiary, essentially, of BC Partners. So you can see how this is all lining up for Bryson DeChambeau to kind of be the default commissioner of this league. And you're absolutely right. I'm sure he loves the idea of being able to do this in his own image, because this is exactly the type of off-course thing that would keep his mind occupied when he knows he needs to keep his mind occupied.
It's very upsetting, Rex, that after a month after the major season is over, now that you're on site at yet another Live event, and folks, this is not Rex's first event. I believe you've covered roughly about a half dozen at this point.
No, this would be
in your
five.
Career.
This
would be
five.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, five.
You have regressed. You have regressed. It is Bryson DeChambeau. It is not DeChambeau. Yes, he's only been a part of our lives over the past, I don't know, dozen years at this point. We're going to get it one day, folks. Rex is finally going to get Bryson DeChambeau.
I'm still spiraling. Anyone who saw my Golf Central hit on Tuesday night could probably have some sympathy. And I had to tell Damon Hack was the host. And he did such a good job. I was choking on a frog in my throat. I couldn't talk. That's never happened before. Like, literally, I couldn't complete a sentence. And I had to tell Damon when I was just talking to him this afternoon, he was such a good teammate. Like, he immediately took it back for me, and he started the gas bag, and gave me a chance to get a drink of water. I still didn't finish very strong, but I was at least able to finish. My voice sounded kind of guttural and very non-Rex. I'm not proud with the way I finished, but I was able to finish. But I had to point out to Damon that, man, thank you so much. You were such a good teammate. I wish I had that teammate on my podcast.
For the first time, you did not have much bass in your voice, to borrow one of your favorite phrases. And folks, that is why I always keep a Yeti. I always keep a Yeti right by me whenever we are recording the pod. So that's sort of the Live component, Rex. I think a secondary story is now what happens with the PGA Tour and what could potentially be wanting or bringing these players back. And Roy McIlroy met with the media on Wednesday at the BMW Championship, and he was asked about the prospect of incorporating some of these players back into the PGA Tour in 2027 and beyond, sort of looking at the potential value that they would bring to the tour and the business. And his counter to that I found to be very interesting. Essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm unsure what value those players, and we're looking, I think, primarily at a John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Tara Latton, and the like, I'm unsure what value they've brought to Live. And the time to come back, and that was sort of the returning member program that Brooks Koepka was the only player who accepted that at the beginning or end of 2025, 2026, however you want to look at it, has come and gone. And it's going to be a, quote, tough road back for those players back to the PGA Tour. I was a little bit surprised by that hard line stance, because conversely, Scottie Scheffler seemed eager to have those players brought back into the fold because he wants to have the most competitive PGA Tour possible. He wants to compete against those players. The penalties, how they're actually reincorporated, the terms and conditions, that was not Scottie's main point, but he could actually see the business sense, the product value of bringing those players back. What do you think of that, the dichotomy in those two assessments?
I've heard that argument before, and I think there is something to it. I mean, if you're just basing this, and if we're just selling widgets, and I'm not turning PGA Tour players, human beings into widgets, but if we boil this down to just a basic business, and if you have one business that's trying to sell a certain type of widget, and that business wasn't successful, what makes you think you can take over that business, and suddenly they are going to be successful? So I can see, I mean, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia spent north of $6 billion trying to make LIV Golf work over the last 4 years. They had some of the biggest names in golf, Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, Cam Smith, all of these players, and yet somehow, yes, got it right, somehow it didn't seem to work. So I see where Rory is coming from on that front. And I will say, we sort of just touched on the idea of all the reports that are swirling about John Rahm. And the idea, and this came up on Tuesday's roundtable, that John Rahm could be a PGA Tour member next year. And I think I dismissed the idea because he would have to get sort of that special dispensation from Brian Rolapp and the PGA Tour that Brooks Koepka got this year. And I don't know if Brian Rolapp really has, one, the political capital, or two, the political will to even do that right now. And why not just wait and see what happens over the next 12 months? Right, John Rahm can play the European Tour and do exactly what Patrick Reed is doing this year and play his way back, and all's forgiven, and we move on. That seems like a better option. But I did have someone tell me today, and there is some truth to this, that if you're Brian Rolapp, that yes, I understand where you're coming from. Why should I do anything? But he's also a businessman. And in his mind, if he truly believes that a John Rahm or Bryson or anyone else is going to make the product that much better, let's be honest, Brian Rolapp is busy selling his product right now. Just like Scott O'Neill, he's going to do whatever it takes. So it's going to be a fascinating few, I'm not even going to say months. I think this is going to transpire in weeks.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see. I guess to Rory's point, he's not sure the value John Rahm brings necessarily. He didn't say that expressly, but that was sort of the underlying current of what he said. Certainly an interesting viewpoint from Roy McIlroy. Rex, as we touch real quickly on the BMW Championship against the second leg of the three-leg FedEx Cup playoffs. I know you're not going to be paying as close attention over the first couple of days. However, there are two primary storylines. Obviously, it's the race and the cut down to get to 30. It's not as significant for these players in terms of the playing privileges, their opportunities they're going to have in 2027. The biggest one, obviously, is the major championships for which they will be exempt, as well as a two-year exemption on the PGA Tour. I did want to ask you, because you are Mr. Bylaws, because you are Mr. PGA Tour Regulations, and you know that handbook front and backwards, if you are offering a two-year exemption to the players who are among the top 30 and reaching the tour championship, how does that sort of jive with what we're going to be having with the championship series in 2028? A two-year exemption on the PGA Tour, does that mean necessarily an exemption into the championship series? Or if, as a PGA Tour member, you're also just exempt onto the Challenger Series? That's where I sit at this point, a little bit confused about what the future is going to be holding.
I mean, I think we'll get a little bit of detail on this next week when Brian Rolapp holds his press conference on Tuesday from Eastlake. I believe you'll be there. So I think I don't know if we will have it boiled down exactly. And like, this is a nerdy sort of numbers game at this point. In the handbook right now, yes, that gives you a 2-year exemption. I can't imagine that's going to be the case going forward. We had this conversation on Sunday's podcast. Someone brought up the idea that if you've won the career Grand Slam, why wouldn't you get some sort of exemption? I love that idea. We're going in the other direction. The PGA Tour is taking away exemptions. They have no interest in building on them. And I'll just do the simple math here real quick. So if 90 players are going to essentially keep their tour cards, that tier one tour card, which is the idea going forward, it's going to be 90 players, and then 20 are going to graduate from tier two to tier one. So now we're already up to 110. It's going to be a 130 essentially player field because they want to make sure they have 120 player field. So 130 players will have tier one status. Now, how do you fill in the rest of those 20? And those are going to fill up really quick because we need to talk about there's going to be some sort of avenue via Q School. There's going to be some sort of avenue via this Last Chance series. And maybe those two are the same thing. Are the DP World Tour guys going to have a direct path to tier one, or where they graduate from the DP World Tour to tier two and then have to work their way up there? And then what about the exemptions? I can't imagine that if you win a PGA Tour, you don't get at least a 2-year exemption. I can't imagine if you win a major, you don't get, it's five now, a 5-year exemption, that you don't get three. We need to factor in medical exemptions. This is going to be a really complicated process, is my point.
It is. And as I sit here, I'm still a little bit confused, but I do think if you really want to get into the weeds and get into the nerdy stuff that actually kind of matters for 2028 and beyond, the exemption categories and how the players still have security blankets or safety nets, whatever phrase you want to use, how they map that out while also creating a tour that is really what have you done for me lately and trying to capture a moment of time of here is the best 90 players right now. I think that's going to be very interesting and certainly a challenge for Brian Rolep and the future competitions committee. Sausage fingers up, which means it's your time to speak.
It does. It means it's my time to speak. I didn't think you'd see it because I'm kind of in the sun right here. I will say it's funny. I was just talking with an equipment rep who's at the BMW Championship, and this conversation came up. And the idea, at least the talk on the range right now at the BMW Championship, is about medical exemptions. And what if you do have some sort of injury? And look, this has to be a major injury. I think the way the tour has done medical exemptions in the past, there's sort of varying degrees. You have a major, you have a minor, you can have a personal issue that sort of kept you out for a prolonged amount of time. They're obviously going to simplify that. But the idea right now among players is if you get hurt, you get hurt. You get relegated to tier two and have to work your way back up. That seems severe, but that's where the conversation is.
Yeah, that's interesting as well. The severity, the amount of starts you're going to be getting, the limited time frame. Are players going to get worn down? Are they potentially going to be more susceptible to sustaining injuries because you're cramming, 23, 24 events into what's going to be a 31-week span? Very, very juicy stuff. The other storyline we don't necessarily need to break down because we're obviously going to have a detailed discussion about this on the Sunday night program is the final automatic qualifying for the U.S. President's Cup team will be finalized following the conclusion of the BMW Championship. As we sit here right now, those players who would be on that American team, Scottie Scheffler, Cameron Young, Sam Burns, Russell Henley, appear safe at this point. Numbers 5 through 8, it gets much, much tighter. That's Ben Griffin, Kyle Morikawa. Those are for numbers 5 and 6, respectively, in the point standings. Wyndham Clark, Chris Goddrup, Xander Schauffele, J.J. Spahn, Justin Thomas, Jacob Bridgman, among the players who are rounding out the top 12. So it's going to be interesting to see what the final six automatically are going to be. I've really circled Rex Ben Griffin, a player we've talked about on the show the past couple of weeks, a player who has dropped about a dozen spots in the official World Golf Ranking 2026, has really accrued primarily almost all of his points based on that three-win 2025 season when they were still receiving points for that. Can he hold on to one of those automatic qualifying spots? Because having to justify that pick as a captain's pick could be interesting for Captain Brant Snedeker. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We are going to have a full recap on Sunday night. It figures to be a jam-packed show. Talk about the BMW Championship and that second leg of the playoffs. Rex is going to have more notes and nuggets from LIV Golf Indianapolis and a wrap on LIV 1.0. If you want to be a part of the program, we are going to try. Yes, folks, we are going to try to have a beefy voices in the crowd section. I did see and I did acknowledge the idea of potentially doing a voices in the crowd bonus edition for YouTube. We're going to try to do that during our linear schedule. If not, we'll certainly be doing that more during the fall when it's a little bit slower, a little bit sleepier. We can get to more of your questions, but please keep feeding it to us. We love to end the show each and every week with some of your questions and some of your comments. So thanks for listening. Thanks for support. You guys know the drill, golfchannel.com for more news and updates. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.